take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
CannabisRadio.com presents The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Hey, this is great, man. Well, on the
earth. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Thursday, September 15th, 2016, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the show. So glad you could make it here on this beautiful September day. We are closing in on marijuana election night 2016, 54 days away, I believe. And we will be there in Los Angeles, California, bringing you live coverage of the Prop 64 vote, as well as the other eight states that are voting on legalization or medical marijuana, as well as the local coverage of Oregon and Colorado and California votes that impact marijuana, as well as whatever else we can find in the next 54 days to bring you coverage of. 6 hours of live coverage beginning at 3 p.m. Pacific time on election night, and we will stay on the air until we get the last returns out of California. So looking forward to it. Marijuana election night 2016, hashtag MJ election. On today's show, we've got some great guests to bring to you today. In our inaugural edition of our new Cultivators Corner segment, coming up at half past, we've got the legendary cannabis grower, author, the man behind MarijuanaGrowing.com, and fellow Treasure Valley native, Jorge Cervantes, will be joining us in Cultivator's Corner to talk about the harvest season, what's going on with commercial and medical growing around the country and around the world. So stay tuned for that. Coming up at half past. And then at 45 after the hour, we are going to inaugurate a segment we're calling Pot and Public Policy. And this segment, we're going to be speaking to a spokesperson from the American Bail Coalition, a nonprofit organization that supports cash bail. We're talking about a case in the 11th Circuit that may decide that requiring cash bail for people in poverty is unconstitutional. He's arguing that cash bail is very important, and that case could set a dangerous precedent for law and order. I will be arguing quite the opposite. So we'll be talking about that at the end of this hour. Also in this first hour, we'll get into some drug war data mining and take a look at why states are taking a fresh look at the so-called drug-free school zones and how the unintended consequences of those laws have got them rethinking how they should be applied. Also on the show, right after our news, we've got our Behind the Headlines segment, a cannabis focus that features audio from Jay-Z, the multi-platinum rapper who is calling the war on drugs an epic fail. Comes from a video posted on the New York Times as an op-ed that includes some great illustrations as well. You'll get to hear the audio here right after our cannabis radio news. And in the headlines today, we've got some news from New Jersey where Chris Christie did something good. Oh my God. Also, we'll talk about new research coming out of Columbia University on medical marijuana versus opioid drugs. We got a tale out of Georgia, a terrible, terrible case that has garnered much attention in the metro Atlanta area of a toddler who was killed by being left in a hot car. We'll tell you what the marijuana connection is to that. Also, we've got opponents of Prop 64 that are trying to raise some fear and doubt about the possibility of passing marijuana legalization. We'll pierce that when we get to that segment. And then a donation from a bush in favor of marijuana legalization. Wow, the times, they are a-changing, aren't they? That's all coming up here in Hour 1, and then in Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio, the phone lines will be open at 650-LEGAL-MJ. I'll give you the latest update on what the stoners against legalization are doing to smear the good name of Seattle Hemp Fest founder Vivian McPeak, and we'll tear apart a couple of their beloved talking points to try to convince people to vote no on legalization.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Cannabis use isn't the only thing growing. So are we. Grow with us. CannabisRadio.com.
Oh, lady marijuana, llama, tell you something now. Bought a game for your phone, gonna make you say, wow! The game's about the game of growing cannabis for cash. Grow the seed, sell the bud, put the savings in the stash. Little by little, your empire grows large. Put different celebrities inside your entourage. You can choose to play with Snoop or me or Cheech and Chong. Cypress Hill, Willie Nelson, Wiz Khalifa with a bong. The name of the game is Hemping, that's the point. Download and play while you light yourself a joint. The business of cannabis should be no crime. Hemp Inc. is even hot proved by the man who run High Times. Oh yeah, get it on Android and iOS today. Marijuana Llama out. Got to tend to me own crops, you know. Money don't make itself. Hemp Inc.
Doc Rob, the concierge for better living.
Cannabis is just one of the many great plants that we have on this planet called Earth that we can use consciously and intelligently to improve our well-being.
Take a real, raw, inside look at healthier living while sharing great ideas and improvements for a better quality of life.
Learning to live and live well is a lifelong process. This is a journey. You could be 80 years old or 8 years old. You can still learn something that's going to make tomorrow a little bit healthier, a little bit easier, a little bit happier, a little bit better.
The Concierge for Better Living with Doc Rob. Only on CannabisRadio.com.
Marijuana is not addictive, but listening to the Russ Belville Show is.
Marijuana legalization is a worldwide phenomenon. Get yourself positioned for the global cannabis marketplace by attending the International Cannabis Business Conference in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. You'll learn from established cannabis professionals, elected officials, and internationally recognized marijuana law reform activists. You'll also enjoy the ICBC's famous VIP party featuring ICBC special guest speaker and Canadian native Tommy Chong. The ICBC is happening in Vancouver on Thursday and Friday, October 13th and 14th at the Hyatt Regency. Log on to internationalcbc.com today to reserve your tickets. That's internationalcbc.com, and bookmark our page for the next ICBCs taking place in Berlin, Germany and San Francisco, California. Don't miss the International Cannabis Business Conference, internationalcbc.com.
It's time for the Cannabis Radio News. Covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Cannabis Radio News is now available exclusively at CannabisRadio.com. Now your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds. This is Cannabis Radio News.
This is your Cannabis Radio News for Thursday, September 15th, 2016. Trenton, New Jersey. Governor Chris Christie, a notorious opponent of any expansion of medical or recreational marijuana, signed a bill adding post-traumatic stress to the medical marijuana qualifying conditions list in New Jersey. The new law still requires that veterans and others with the debilitating mental health condition must first exhaust all other conventional PTSD therapies before being allowed to try non-toxic herbal cannabis. But the governor also directed the health department to establish, quote, clear objective criteria, end quote, for evaluating PTSD for fear that too many would lie or exaggerate their condition just to use marijuana for fun. That may further restrict the ability of vets and others with legitimate need from accessing cannabis as a medicine. New Jersey is the 18th medical marijuana state of the 25 to recognize PTSD as a qualifying condition. New York, New York. Rapper Jay-Z has teamed up with the Drug Policy Alliance to produce a 4-minute video excoriating the war on drugs. The New York Times posted the production as a video op-ed piece entitled, "The War on Drugs is an Epic Fail." Jay-Z provides narration over illustrations as he describes his background, growing up as a young black, quote, hustler, end quote, in the Reagan-era war on drugs. Also included are statistics on mass incarceration, explanations of mandatory minimum sentencing, and how the inherently racist nature of the drug war is continuing into the newly legal marijuana industry through laws that bar felons from licensing. New York, New York. Researchers at Columbia have concluded that access to medical marijuana correlates with half the use of opioid drugs among people aged 21 to 40. In the study, researchers analyzed the traffic fatality data between 1999 and 2013 from 18 states that test deceased drivers for drugs and alcohol. They found that dead drivers were half as likely to have detectable opioids in their system in the states that had operational medical marijuana laws. However, for drivers over age 40, there was no significant difference in opioid detection whether a state had medical marijuana or not. Previous research, published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, found that states with medical marijuana laws also had lower death rates from opioid overdose. Brunswick, Georgia. Smelling like marijuana was justification enough for a potential juror to be disqualified from serving in the trial of a man accused of murdering his toddler. According to police, on the morning of June 18, 2014, Justin Ross Harris left his 22-month-old son, Cooper, in the car while at work at the Home Depot. Harris went back to the car at lunch to place something inside for safekeeping. Police say that at 4:20 p.m., Harris then left work with friends when he realized Cooper was still in the car, only to find the boy already dead from heat stroke. While Harris proclaims the incident was an accident, the state has charged Harris with a felony murder count, noting that Harris had been researching child hot car deaths on the internet. The trial venue was moved from the Atlanta area to the Atlantic coast when the judge determined that potential jurors in the metro Atlanta area were too biased by, quote, persistent and pervasive, end quote, news coverage of the tragedy. Los Angeles, California. Opponents of California's Prop 64 have claimed that the legalization initiative will lead to the mass advertisement of marijuana on television, including family shows. While recent polls have shown support among voters between 58 and 60%, the No on Prop 64 campaign claims they have internal polling showing that when voters understand there will be marijuana ads on TV, support drops to just 52%. The Yes on Prop 64 campaign has countered that federal law still allows the FCC to ban advertising for illegal drugs, which the feds still find marijuana to be. Furthermore, they point out that Prop 64 actually has stricter controls on advertising than the four currently legal states, and their internal polling shows that when voters understand that, support for the legalization measure jumps to 64%. Watertown, Massachusetts. A cousin of former President George W. Bush has donated $10,000 to the marijuana legalization campaign in Massachusetts. Jonathan Bush is the CEO of Athena Health, the Watertown-based healthcare giant. Athena Health spokeswoman Holly Spring confirmed that Bush believes marijuana use by adults is, quote, one of the many freedoms Americans should have the right to, end quote. This has been your Cannabis Radio News for Thursday, September 15th, 2016. I'm Russ Belville.
We don't limit how much you smoke, and we don't limit where you listen. Cannabis Radio is now on iTunes, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio.
Cash?
Sorry.
I don't carry around cash, and I don't want to use the ATM and pay surcharges.
You don't need to carry cash. Haven't you heard about PayQuick?
Okay, tell me about PayQuick.
It's the safe and easy way to pay. It works just like your debit card to securely pay for your purchase, and it gives you rewards points every time you use it.
Nice.
PayQuick, the safe and easy way to pay. PayQuick.com.
NARMAL stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks may be far less than those posed by legal drugs. Warning: hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals, or at least they pay me to say that. A public service message from CannabisRadio.com and the Russ Belville Show.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show and 420 Radio.
The world of cannabis is evolving at a frenetic pace. The Russ Belville Show gets behind the headlines to take a deeper look at breaking news in our Cannabis Focus.
Today in the Cannabis Focus, we want to take a look at this new piece that has been published by the New York Times. It's an op-ed, a video op-ed that they published from multi-platinum rapper Jay-Z, who is calling the war on drugs an epic fail. It's a great video. I encourage you to check out the New York Times website so you can see it, because the illustrations behind the video are very compelling. He tells the tale of growing up in Brooklyn and how the war on drugs, of course, has impacted him as an African-American. And it's being promoted by the Drug Policy Alliance. Asha Bandele from DPA has written a great op-ed to go along with the video that asks the question why black folks were the ones that got disproportionately sentenced and imprisoned for the marijuana industry when it was illegal. But now that it's becoming legal, about 99% of the marijuana industry is owned by white people. It's an important question about the structural problems with legalization and the inherently racist nature of the war on drugs. We'll turn it over now to the audio from Jay-Z on the New York Times. This is "The War on Drugs is an Epic Fail."
In 1986, when I was coming of age, Ronald Reagan doubled down on the war on drugs that had been started by Richard Nixon in 1971. Drugs were bad, fried your brain, and drug dealers were monsters. The sole reason neighborhoods and major cities were failing. No one wanted to talk about Reaganomics and the ending of social safety nets, the defunding of schools and the loss of jobs in cities across America. Young men like me who hustled became the sole villain, and drug addicts lacked moral fortitude. In the 1990s, incarceration rates in the U.S. blew up. Today we imprison more people than any other country in the world. China, Russia, Iran, Cuba. All countries we consider autocratic and repressive. Yeah, more than them. Judges' hands were tied by tough-on-crime laws, and they were forced to hand out mandatory life sentences for simple possession and low-level drug sales. My home state of New York started this with Rockefeller laws. Then the feds made distinctions between people who sold powder cocaine and crack cocaine, even though they were the same drug. Only difference is how you take it. And even though white people used and sold crack more than black people, somehow it was black people who went to prison. The media ignored actual data to this day. Crack is still talked about as a black problem. The NYPD raided our Brooklyn neighborhoods while Manhattan bankers openly used coke with impunity. The war on drugs exploded the U.S. prison population, disproportionately locking away black and Latinos. Our prison population grew more than 900%. When the war on drugs began in 1971, our prison population was 200,000. Today it is over 2 million. Long after the crack era ended, we continued our war on drugs. There were more than 1.5 million drug arrests in 2014. More than 80% were for possession only. Almost half were for marijuana. People are finally talking about treating addiction to harder drugs as a health crisis, but there's no compassionate language about drug dealers. Unless, of course, we're talking about places like Colorado, whose state economy got a huge boost by the above-ground marijuana industry. A few states south in Louisiana, they're still handing out mandatory sentences for people who sell weed, despite a booming and celebrated $50 billion legal marijuana industry. Most states still disproportionately hand out mandatory sentences to black and Latinos with drug cases. If you're entrepreneurial and live in one of the many states that are passing legalized laws, you may still face barriers participating in the above-ground economy. Venture capitalists migrate to these states to open multi-billion dollar operations, but former felons can't open a dispensary. Lots of times those felonies were drug charges, caught by poor people who sold drugs for a living, but are now prohibited from participating in one of the fastest growing economies. Got it? In states like New York, where holding marijuana is no longer grounds for arrest, police issue possession citations in black and Latino neighborhoods at a far higher rate than other neighborhoods. Kids in Crown Heights are constantly stopped and ticketed for trees. Kids at dorms in Columbia, where rates of marijuana use are equal to or worse than those in the hood, are never targeted or ticketed. Rates of drug use are as high as they were when Nixon declared this so-called war in 1971. 45 years later, it's time to rethink our policies and laws. The war on drugs is an epic fail.
Silent breed is people!
What a fantastic piece by Jay-Z. It's spreading all across the internet, as well it should. Find it in my social media feeds on Facebook and on Twitter at Radical Russ, and pass it along to everyone you know. Happy 420 to the Mountain Time Zone. That includes you, New Mexico, land of enchantment. Let's get enchanted. We'll be right back with some drug war data mining.
Maui Wowie, Acapulco Gold, California Kush. Our strains stretch everywhere, too.
This is the Cannabis Radio Network.
Play as Ted Growing, expelled botany sophomore and the biggest grower in town, only on Weed Firm Replanted. Available on the App Store and Google Play.
It's a lot of work being the biggest grower in town. Maintaining a room full of plants while dealing with a slew of eccentric customers, from a hardcore partier to the curious neighbor next door.
Is anybody home?
Help me expand my bud business by unlocking new strains, customizing my grow room, and completing challenges that you can't get enough of. Grow your empire so big you can see it from space. Low on funds? Don't worry. Weed Firm Replanted is free to download.
Download Weed Firm Replanted for free on the App Store and Google Play today. Get growing, Mr. Growing.
Previously on the Stoner Jesus Show.
Hello?
Hey, are you the one that put the ad on Craigslist? It was in the personal section about, you know, want to have a little good time tonight?
No.
Nothing about, you know, any backdoor action?
No.
A little fifth base? You're not into that?
No, and I suggest you don't fucking call my phone number, you fucking perverted bastard.
Are you sure you're not the one on the Craigslist? You're talking dirty to me. Damn, she hung up.
That was good.
It was funny, though.
The Stoner Jesus Show, live Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Or find the Stoner Jesus Show podcast on demand at CannabisRadio.com and StonerJesus.net.
Peace, bitches.
You can find Radical Russ online everywhere. Gmail, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, YouTube, SoundCloud, Snapchat, LinkedIn, and Boise State University's 2400 baud modem bulletin board system from 1985.
The Russ Belville Show is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest-growing business association in the fastest-growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com, and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
Promoting the end of adult cannabis prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It's even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more on this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
Today in the Data Mines, we take a look at a piece that came to us via Stateline, a nonpartisan, nonprofit news service from the Pew Charitable Trust. And the title is Why States Are Taking a Fresh Look at Drug-Free Zones. And what we're talking about here is the drug-free school zone laws that typically mandate that within 1,000 feet of a school, if you're busted for some sort of drug offense, there's an enhanced penalty or a mandatory sentence. The idea of this started in the mid-1980s during the crack cocaine scare, and the idea was that we were going to push the drug dealers away from the schools, keep them away from the kids that are so vulnerable. Now these laws are being reexamined because people have become aware of the problem of mass incarceration, and they've realized that the drug-free school zones didn't work as intended and had a whole slew of unintended consequences. However, not all the states are coming around on this. We've got states like Delaware, Indiana, Kentucky, and Utah that are reducing the size of the drug-free school zone, but other states like Arkansas, Hawaii, and Texas are expanding the school zone. This time, because of the opioid scare. Now, let's start by taking a look at some of the variants of these school zones. In Arkansas, they've got some of the most restrictive and stringent laws regarding the drug-free zone. It's not just for an area around schools, but also colleges, universities, school bus stops, public parks, skating rinks, YMCAs, community centers, public housing, treatment centers, daycare centers, and churches. Jeez. And if you are convicted of possession, delivery, manufacture, or sale of drugs within one of those zones, you get an extra 10 years in prison with no chance of parole. In nine other states, Alaska, Arkansas, Arizona, Connecticut, Indiana, Minnesota, New Mexico, Michigan, and Oklahoma, simple possession in a school zone can get you more time. In Alabama, the school zones that include colleges and housing projects don't have a 1,000-foot barrier. 15,460-foot barrier, roughly 3 miles around a school, is a school zone in Alabama. In Connecticut, the drug-free school zones are 1,500 feet from the perimeter of a school or a daycare center or public housing. In 2014, the Prison Policy Initiative researched this and found that in Bridgeport, Connecticut, 92% of the 148,000 residents lived in a drug-free school zone. Meanwhile, in the small town of Bridgewater, just 8% of the residents lived in a drug-free school zone. And the point of this is that if you keep expanding the drug-free school zone to include just about everywhere, then you don't have a drug-free school zone. Everything is just a zone. And if the idea was to push the drug dealers out, where the hell were they supposed to go? There's nowhere to go that's not a drug-free school zone. Researchers in Massachusetts found that when the zones are so extensive, they don't have any effect on moving the drugs away from kids. And the unintended consequence is that it tends to target minorities in the dense urban neighborhoods. If you're out in the suburbs, in the residential suburbs, you're going to be far away from the school. But if you're in the densely packed urban areas, then you're going to be within blocks of a school no matter where you go. And the more densely packed the urban area, the more likely we're going to have a high representation of minorities. And therefore, that's where we start to see that disproportionate sentencing happening again, leading to our prisons being overcrowded with Black and Latino people. The other thing, too, is that drug dealers tend to work where they live. And they want to live where there are customers, and customers are in the city. So they point out that, like, a guy dealing dime bags in Tennessee in the city could do a whole ton of prison time compared to, say, a major meth manufacturer out in the country, just because that guy is nowhere near a school zone. And there's some terrible cases that illustrate how tragic this has become. The case of Roderick Griffin Jr., he was standing on the porch of his grandfather's house in Chattanooga in 2009 when the cops rolled up. He ran, as did everyone else. According to the cops, he threw down a rock of crack, and it was about 2.6 grams they caught him with. They arrested him and charged him with intent to sell cocaine and possession with intent to deliver cocaine, a Class B felony. 2.6 grams, and that's possession with intent to sell, Class B felony. But because where they caught him was within 1,000 feet of an elementary school, he got charged with a Class A felony instead and faced an automatic sentence of 15 to 60 years with no parole. Now, had he run a little farther, gotten caught more than 1,000 feet away, he'd have just gotten 8 years in prison and would have been eligible for parole in less than 3 years. The man had no previous arrest record. He ended up pleading guilty and was sentenced to 8 years, and he has to serve the full eight. Tennessee's drug-free school zone law isn't just schools, though. It includes preschools, daycare centers, public libraries, recreational centers, and parks. So this is leading to the mass incarceration problem that we have, where people are caught for these low-level offenses, and just based on zip code, based on geography, they're getting massively increased sentences for the same crimes. In Tennessee, it's about 500 people that are serving time just for the fact that we're in a drug-free school zone. People are afraid to attack this. They're afraid to change it because they don't want to seem soft on drugs, soft on crime, or in any way trying to help the drug dealers get close to the kids. But it's time to recognize that you can't declare everything a drug-free zone, or else it has no meaning. All right, when we come back, we've got our Cultivator's Corner. Grow questions with Jorge Cervantes. You can call in live at 650-LEGAL-MJ if you'd like to ask a question, or you can visit us in the chat room.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
How high do you like your profit margin? CannabisRadio.com.
The next generation of vaporizers has arrived. Vuber vaporizers are blazing the way with unparalleled technology for oil, concentrate, or dry flower pens. Providing unsurpassed customer service and expert craftsmanship, Vuber vaporizers use cutting-edge technology, providing a power-packed, smoother vapor with a lifetime guarantee. Experience vaporizing the way it was meant to be, the Vuber way.
Georgia. Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Adrian, I finished it. Adrian.
Okay, maybe you're high too.
Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
They say marijuana grows like a weed, but growing high-quality marijuana takes more than just throwing a seed in the ground. Join us as we speak with the most recognized cannabis horticulturists in the world and take your live grow questions in our Cultivator's Corner.
Welcome back, everybody. Time for our Cultivator's Corner, and joining us on the Cultivator's Corner for the first time ever, we've got the legendary grower, the man behind MarijuanaGrowing.com. It's Jorge Cervantes. Jorge, how you doing, man?
Really good, Russ. Gosh, it's wonderful to be here.
We're really excited to have you, and we've got the harvest season that's coming up here. I'm sure people are pretty excited about that, and I was just wondering from your perspective now here in Oregon and the other legal states that it's harvest time. What's your perspective on how the cultivation techniques are being or how the cultivation is being handled in the legal commercial markets?
Well, I'll tell you, Russ, it's pretty amazing. I've talked to everybody I've talked to, and I've talked to several store owners, you know, included. They are selling more products, and more people are growing more cannabis than ever before. It's just going to be a stellar year. I was in Southern Oregon, and then it's all the way up into Portland. Everybody's growing there, having legal cannabis. It's just amazing. So many backyard gardens. And now, too, in California, we're going to vote this year. That's where I'm at, in Northern California. Everybody's growing a lot here, too. It's incredible. So I think we're going to see tons and tons of cannabis this year. But there's some things people should be paying attention to right now, you know? There's quite a few things, like, you know, especially I'd be getting ready for some rainstorms. I don't know what the weather's been like up in Portland, but there's been some rain up in Northern California. And if you can, well, definitely people should be trellising their plants up. I like a horizontal trellis. Those work real well because when the rain comes, the plants are going to get real heavy and they're going to fall over. But if they're trellised, they won't fall too far. So that's a real good deal to get going if it already isn't done. And then there's another few things you want to do. If you can, you might want to, if you can, cover them with plastic. I know that's really hard because a lot of people have really good, great big plants. But one of my favorite tricks is to use one of those electric leaf blowers.
Yeah.
I use
the
electric one because it's not so strong as the gasoline-powered one. But that's what I blow the water off the leaves with. And it works great. You know, so all kinds of things can be done this time of year.
Well, that's a nice little tip from Jorge Cervantes. Now, we've got people in our chat room that are listening as well. Plus, we've got our live phone line open at 650-LEGAL-MJ. So if you've got a question for one of the greatest growers of all time, get it in here at 650-LEGAL-MJ. Our first one coming from John Thomas in our chat room kind of alludes to, you know, Prop 64 and the legalization that's happening across the country that, of course, is leading to, you know, big commercial grows, which is also leading to a drop in the price of cannabis. And the question is, as the prices are dropping, are growers still going to be okay when marijuana sells for so much less, like, you know, even $50 an ounce maybe?
Well, yeah. I mean, I was just looking at some costs of production and then what it's been selling for. And my gosh, even at $1,000 a pound like it is now, it's, you know, you should be able to keep your production costs down pretty good, you know. So $1,000 a pound is quite a bit of money. I think the price should be able to go down to a couple $100 a pound because, well, you know, there's just so many costs that people have had to live through. And that's usually because of regulation or, well, regulation and fear. But my gosh, you know, the price should go down way, way down. Backyard growers, which are usually the most inefficient, they should be able to keep their prices down to that. And then see, a lot of times these commercial growers, they have to set up on land that's really not the best. And usually it's got hillsides and whatnot to it. And that's a big problem, you know, so they're not at all efficient. And then also the watering is usually not too efficient. So if these guys could use, you know, hydraulic machinery, they'd be a lot better off. And if they had flat land to grow on, they'd be a lot better off. But ultimately, the price of production has got to go way, way down from what it is now. Because growing out at the end of a dirt road that takes 20 minutes or 30 minutes to get to from town or even longer, that's not too efficient.
Right. We've got a question from our chat room asking, how should a little mold or mildew be washed off at the end of flower?
Oh, that's really pretty easy. You still got to watch it, though. It's the mold is still inside the plant. But the thing is, if you want to wash it off the surface, all you have to do is put in, it's about a 5% mix of, it's you get the 3% of, what's it called? The H2O2, hydrogen peroxide. And then you put it in a mix, like a 5% solution of that. You put it into water and then wash your plants in it just like you would vegetables. And that'll wash off all the pollutants, not just mold, but anything else, any bug poop or all kinds of stuff, dust, dirt, everything. It's just a good idea for all plants. And then after you rinse it off, you submerge it for, I don't know, 10 to 30 seconds, swish it around a bit. You could leave it in longer, but then shake it to dry it off and then hang it up in front of a fan until the big drops dry off. And that's those, well, I usually do it in complete branches. And those branches are now ready to dry. I did a video of it, of that specifically. I've got a couple of hundred videos up on my YouTube. On my YouTube channel. Just search for Jorge Cervantes channel, and you can find that video along with a heck of a lot of others that are pretty instructional.
All right. And this other thing I want to make sure that we got clear, when you're talking about the hydrogen peroxide, you're going to the store and you're buying the bottle that's the 3% hydrogen peroxide, but then you're further diluting it to a 5% solution after that. Okay.
That's right.
You put in like one cup of the 3% hydrogen peroxide and another 19 cups of water.
Yeah, exactly. For like 5 gallons, you know, I mean, it's a real light dilution. And it works really, really well. You can see all the scum and everything float up to the top. You're going to want to do that all the time. And it's not at all hard on buds. You know, you don't want to bang them around, but you know, I keep them on branches and just swill them around in there a bit. And it works great. And it washes them, washes everything off. No worries.
Wow, that's great to hear. All right, so check that out. And, of course, you can find tips like that and all sorts of great information in Jorge's books and his videos. You can check out marijuanagrowing.com for all of the other information and links that you might need. Now, the question I had for you as we continue on with marijuana legalization happening, one of the fears that we have in the community is that it'll be overcome by commercialism. We'll end up with Marlboro weed and Walmart weed and this mass-produced swag that nobody's going to want. What's your take on that fear, on that theory as legalization unfolds?
Well, I think it'll take those guys a long time to gear up. And I think there's a lot of other people. It's just like the microbrews and stuff. As far as the beer goes or the wine industry, it's really hard to control something like that because there's so many different types and everything can be quite unique. And then the other thing is the backyard and home growers that can grow a few plants are going to be a huge segment of this market. And I think they're going to be responsible for keeping the price low. And also control maybe 40 or 50% or more of all of the cannabis that's distributed. Mm. So they're going to be a huge force, I believe.
Right, right. Okay, we have one final question coming in from our chat room. Michael wants to know, as we move into this future of cannabis cultivation in California under Prop 64, are the current growers in Northern California in jeopardy of not being able to grow in their current spots because of possible zoning? Like if they only limit growing to agricultural zones and they restrict it in the forest zones, some of those Northern California growers, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, everybody's fighting stuff now. A lot of zoning things never came up. Because, see, this whole industry was illegal. It grew illegal. They wouldn't let us have any place calling our own, you know, that we could live. And so, consequently, people just moved out in the middle of nowhere. Well, now it's put all kinds of stress on that environment, especially when that wasn't a big issue. The stress wasn't as big an issue until the droughts came. And when we have these back-to-back years of drought, it's really difficult on the environment. So we're seeing all kinds of legal sanctions coming into the cannabis world. I was over in Calaveras County in California, and they've got all kinds of water code things they've got to deal with, and greenhouse codes and building codes and grading codes. All of, you know, they've got to conform like everybody else. So it's going to be a real difficult transition for a lot of people. And then other people will very well could be grandfathered in for one reason or another. But it's super important to organize. So no matter what happens, you're able to be represented.
Great. All right. Jorge Cervantes is the author of numerous growing books, including the new encyclopedia. Give people a quick link or shout out to tell them about that.
Oh, yeah. The Cannabis Encyclopedia. It's great. It really is. It's twice as big as Marijuana Horticulture. It's packed full of all kinds of great information. 596 pages. Foreword was written by the president of Mexico. And I'll tell you, it really does have everything. And I was really fortunate to work with a lot of great people and had great editors. So the book is all everything's correct. And you can find it on Amazon.
All right. Jorge, thank you so much for calling in. We appreciate it. And we'll talk to you again in a couple Thursdays.
Okay. Hey, thank you so much, Russ.
Check it out at marijuanagrowing.com. We're back with Jeffrey Clayton from the American Bale Coalition after this.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Seed to sale, clicks to conversions, and more. You're listening to the Cannabis Radio Network.
Dr. Dabber, hurry. Its temperature is shooting past 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. It's burning up.
I'm afraid for this little guy, it's just too late.
What caused the problem?
Only Dr. Dabber can maintain the perfect temperature for a smooth-tasting, slower burn. This standard vaporizer lost all of its health benefits, sending it up in smoke.
So you're telling me that most vapor pens burn so hot they produce smoke, not vapor?
Correct. Keep away from those standard vaporizer pens and turn to Dr. Dabber. Doctor's orders.
Less heat, more flavor.
Previously on the Stoner Jesus Show.
We do have John McAfee. He's running for the Libertarian Party nomination for president. What makes someone like you want to take the reins of this?
We're so far behind, it's frightening. And in a cyber war, we can't hack into the Chinese. Back in 1979, they started building cyber defense systems. We didn't even think about it until 20 years ago. I see no candidates and certainly no one within government capable of dealing with this issue.
The Stoner Jesus Show, live Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Or find the Stoner Jesus Show podcast on demand at CannabisRadio.com and StonerJesus.net.
Peace, bitches.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Your grapefruits are no match for my Trump Towers.
Okay, maybe you're high too.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
Marijuana legalization is just the beginning of a process of restoring our natural rights to the cannabis plant. Join us now as we learn more about the rules, regulations, and court decisions that are shaping the landscape of legal marijuana in this edition of Pot Public Policy. Welcome back, everyone. In this edition of Pot Public Policy, we're taking a look at one aspect of the criminal justice system that can affect cannabis consumers who get popped with possession of marijuana, and that's the system of cash bail in America. This is a system that's been around since the early 1900s, where in order to guarantee that you're not going to run off on your charge of holding the bag, you got to pay a certain amount of cash to get out of jail. And unfortunately, if you're poor and can't afford that, you've got to stay in jail. There's an 11th Circuit court case coming up that may decide whether or not requiring poor people who can't afford it to pay bail is actually constitutional or not. And joining us to discuss this, we've got Jeffrey Clayton here from he's the policy director from the American Bail Coalition. And Jeffrey, welcome to the show. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Russ, for having me on. I appreciate it.
Okay, so we've kind of set up the case here where the decision is whether or not requiring people who are really poor, who can't afford bail, whether or not they should have to stay in jail when someone who's rich can just get out of jail by giving a bail bondsman some money.
And what is the position of your organization on this? And can you explain why you support that position?
Well, that's the theory of the plaintiffs who are advocating for the complete elimination of all monetary conditions of bail in the country right now. Our coalition is against that particular portion of the movement, even though, as you say, it's some of these low-level cases where, like possession of marijuana cases being a good example, that there should be some bail reform on that. But these particular activists are trying to throw out the entire system, which certainly would have huge implications for those charged with marijuana possession and distribution and all other crimes in the country.
When they talk about throwing out the entire system of cash bail, do they offer some sort of replacement?
Yeah, they're really highlighting the federal system and the District of Columbia system after which it was modeled as the example, which unfortunately uses what is called preventative detention, which is sort of a move against the American tradition that everybody has a right to bail, and locks people up with no bail. And so that was a good idea in 1983, but has increased the rate of detention in the federal system by 267%. And most of those were drug cases. Let's just be frank about it. Given the crack cocaine disparity and all the things going on in the 80s, that's who it hit. And so to then say we should eliminate the current system and then have states adopt that system, I think it'd have, you know, wide-ranging impacts on people.
There is that difference between the federal bail system and the state bail system. I found some, you know, the 1966 Bail Reform Act during the Johnson administration, the idea here being under the federal system that they're not going to hold people who haven't been convicted if they're just too poor to pay bail. It's interesting, as I started looking up some of the facts on this that were kind of amazing to me, that there's between 500,000 and 750,000 people in jail at any given time who are just charged. They're innocent until proven guilty. So they're sitting in a cell, presumably innocent, but they were too poor to be able to afford the bail to get out. And housing these prisoners is costing us $9 billion a year in taxpayer costs. And 60 to 70% of the people that were housed in such a way never ended up being convicted. And that includes 115,000 people who were drug convictions. So as far as bail reform goes, you're arguing against throwing the whole system out. What would you suggest as far as reforms on this? Because here on the show, we've told numerous stories of people who get popped for some sort of low-level drug crime. They end up dying in jail, and just because they couldn't afford $100 for bail or whatever. What can we do?
Yeah, and, you know, I live in my home state of Colorado where, you know, the laws have been liberalized, and simple possession is, you know, not an arrestable crime. And so I think it's not just bail reform, it's the whole process of arrest. What are we arresting people? Why are we arresting certain people for certain crimes? Because if we're going to turn around and let people go after we arrest them, why are we arresting them in the first place? So I think that's the thing to look at is these low-level bails, and then also what the plaintiffs are asking for in that case, which is due process, because a judge makes the decision. They look at all the factors, and the person makes their argument as to what they can and can't pay, and a judge, you know, makes that decision. The other thing I'll point out is the vast majority of the reason people stay in pre-trial is due to other factors, like they have multiple pending cases or immigration holds or the like. So even though there is room for reform, it's not the majority of the problem.
Yeah. What other stuff I found on this was that the average stay in jail for these folks is about 21 days. And there was the terrible case of Khalif Browder in New York City, popped for supposedly stealing a backpack, ended up serving 3 years in Rikers because he couldn't make his bail. The 3 years kind of affected his mind, and after he got out of jail, he committed suicide. And again, this guy wasn't convicted of anything. He just couldn't afford to get out on bail. Go ahead.
The Khalif case, if I could just interrupt. The Khalif case actually highlights what I'm talking about because he was on a probation hold.
Yeah.
So he wasn't bailable. And that's the unfortunate part. He may have been bailable for a period of hours, but the reality is he was going back in. Plus, he's a juvenile in solitary confinement.
Yeah.
But that, I think, illustrates my point is that when we just look at money as being the number one problem, we're missing a lot of the other problems that are out there that we could fix.
Let's look on the other side of the bail issue. Folks that haven't been to jail may not know this, but when you get popped, I got popped in Utah, they assign a cash bail. Mine was $1,167 for having a tiny, tiny, tiny amount of cannabis oil. And then there's bail bondsmen. Bail bondsmen can then you can pay them 10%. They'll put up the rest and then you can get out of jail. But what we found is that there's four states here in America, and I'm in Oregon, which is one of the states that have eliminated for-profit bail bondsmen. Multnomah County, my home county here, is one of the ones that's done a lot of reform on bail with more pretrial supervision, close street supervision, electronic ankle monitoring, and such. So is the profit motive part of the problem here? Because since 1990, there's been a 50% increase in how much the bond is and a 50% increase on how many crimes are charged or given bail. Is the profit motive part of the problem?
You know, it could be. I don't see that as being the problem. I don't really note in looking at the four states that have done the reforms that the results are very much different. You look at the city of Chicago as a mess, because they're doing low $100 and $200 bonds. And so, you know, I think it's just about having a smart system more than it is we hate commercial bail or, we like it. And so I think it's, you know, states' choices to do that. And I think the research certainly shows that cash bail works better than recognizance release with supervision. But, you know, in some places, in some cases, you know, supervision can be effective.
You know, this commercial bail industry in the United States pulls in $2 billion a year in revenue, and the U.S. and the Philippines are the only countries on earth that still have some sort of commercial for-profit bail system. Why are we the outliers? Why has the rest of the world abandoned this?
Well, I think it's just a matter of that they never adopted it, but they never adopted things like due process or having the judge and the prosecutor be two different people either.
But wait. You're telling me the United Kingdom doesn't have due process?
Oh, no. I'm talking, the United Kingdom has financial conditions of bail. They just don't have commercial
For-profit bail, right. Exactly. That's my point,
right.
Is this for-profit bail commercial model is generating $2 billion worth of profit here in the United States. That suggests to me that it's going to have a lot of lobbying pressure on our legislators to maintain crimes and to increase crimes and increase amounts of bail to fund that profit motive.
It's certainly a possibility. I think, having been a person on the front lines who's on sort of, the side of keeping the industry, I would say that the opposition has substantially more resources than we do. And that's why we're having a difficult time right now, you might say.
I guess maybe at the heart of it, aside from all the statistics and the anecdotes, is just the concept of the idea that if I'm a poor person, I have to stay in jail when I'm innocent. But if I'm a rich person, I don't have to stay in jail when I'm innocent. What about that basic concept? I mean, is it just morally wrong?
I don't think so, because a judge is making that decision, like I said, based typically on 15 factors. But that's a policy choice. And if that's the choice, then, folks need to be prepared for the outcome. And that's, the costly DC system, or sort of the risk that if we take away money as sort of a temporary means of detaining someone, with a possibility release, that we're replacing that with no possibility release. And so what would the system look like afterwards, I think, is more than just sort of fundamentally saying it's wrong.
Well, as I look at the statistics here, I find that African Americans are assigned higher bail amounts than white people for the same exact crime. So it seems to me the system itself is broken and needs some serious reform. But we are out of time at this part of the segment. I want to thank you, Jeffrey Clayton, for joining us. And before I let you go, to give out any sort of websites or information you might want to suggest for people that are interested in this topic.
Absolutely. Hit our website at AmericanBailCoalition.org and click the In the News section, and has updates on all things bail reform in this country. Thanks, Russ, for having me on. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Jeffrey. It's a complex subject, and I appreciate taking a deeper look at it. And we'll research it more, and maybe we'll get you back on for more discussion. Thanks a lot.
Fantastic. Thank you.
All right. That's all the time we got for Hour 1, but stay tuned for Toker Talk Radio Hour 2. We'll take your calls at 650-LEGAL-MJ. What do you think about the cash bail system? All I know is that when I was busted in Utah, I didn't have $1,100 to my name. In fact, if I didn't have some really good friends that got nice deep bank accounts, I might still be in Utah jail. We're also going to dissect more of the Stoners Against Legalization, that dragonfly De La Luz. She's doubled down on hijacking the good name of Seattle Hemp Fest, Vivian McPeak. We'll give you the details, plus tear apart some more of their talking points. For everyone here at CannabisRadio.com, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.